are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of June 7th, 2015. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor for Technical Content at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Radio. Now, we've got a great panel lined up today. It's not a huge panel, but you know what? We lack in quantity. We're more than making up for in quality. We have with us Kelly Sheridan, who is an associate editor here at Information Week. Kelly, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
And we've got the always popular Dave Wagner here. Dave is another executive editor. He is executive editor for our online communities and IT life. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks, Kurt. I'm sorry to bring the quality down. If you just had Kelly, it would have been a really high quality group today.
Well, you know, we try to keep everything diverse here on Information Week Live, and I think we span the gamut from all kinds of directions, although for the sake of propriety, I will limit it to geographically, since Kelly is in our New York office and Dave comes to us from out on the left coast. Well, this certainly has not been a boring week in the world of IT. You know, last time I made a joke about the big hack of the federal systems, in which I said that information had been stolen from pretty much everyone who ever worked for the federal government. And as it turns out, I was only so far off, because we're hearing now that information was stolen from everyone who's currently working for the government, and some number of those previous workers. And I have to say, I've never been happier to not be a federal employee. Kelly, I'm going to turn to you first. Is this something that people there in the New York office, the people that you're talking to, are talking about?
It's something that's definitely been on my radar. I mean, obviously, it's been all over the news, and so many people are talking about it. I don't cover the security space frequently, but something like this is definitely it's definitely making waves. So it's something that I have been hearing about. It's scary how people can access information like that. I'm not only from present employees, but past employees as well.
Well, now, Dave, I can usually count on you to hold down the privacy advocacy side of the thing. So from that point of view, you know, how terrifying is this for people who work for the federal government?
Well, it's funny. The first thought I had was that I feel like, to a certain degree, Secretary of State Clinton has been redeemed in her choice of not putting all of her information on federal networks. even though I don't think that was a very smart choice on her part. It's a big deal. It really is. But you know, as Sarah was here last week talking about the Anthem breach that was $96 million or something close to that, and some other breaches, the number isn't so scary as the idea that it happened to our government, right? I think a lot of times we like to think that the good side of having all of this spooky NSA tracking and being able to dominate the world with IT is that also means that our information is safe. And what's really frightening is that when the federal government can't keep its records safe, you wonder whether it can keep the missile codes safe and you know, other you know, secret information safe. That's when it starts getting really scary. And not to downplay the privacy part of it, the privacy part is a real issue, but it just starts to make you feel like there's nothing left we can trust as secure, which, you know, is accurate but not comforting.
Well, you know, one of the things that really disturbed me more than the fact that the federal employee records had been hacked was that, well, two aspects. One, apparently the hack occurred almost a year before it was discovered. I mean, many months, just, you know, in an echo of what happened with Sony. It's not just that they got in, but that they were able to run free, you know, tripping lightly through the fields of data for a long time. And in what had to be one of the sales calls that will go down in history, it was apparently discovered when a software vendor went in, a software vendor that has a package that finds malware and intrusions. They were demonstrating their software in a sales call and went, now, if you, in fact, had malware, we would, oh, wait, look at that. and that's how it was discovered. So, you know, if some manager had decided to blow off a salesperson, we still might not know about this. And I find that somewhat disturbing.
And the next CIO of the federal government is that sales call dude.
Well, somebody got something out of this then, right?
Yeah, if he didn't get a promotion or at least a giant raise out of that, I don't know who deserves it.
Well, you know, one thing that's interesting here is that for a lot of these employees, apparently among the data that was sitting there, unencrypted, by the way, is the information that came from the applications that federal employees file to get a security clearance. And from what I understand, I have never had a clearance, but apparently the questionnaire that you fill out in order to get even a relatively low-level security clearance is more than 100 pages long. So the hackers don't even have to go in and do a sophisticated phishing attack. They know almost literally everything there is to know about everyone who works for the government and has a security clearance. That has to be a problem.
Yeah, those bank questions don't seem so tough anymore. The name of your first pet or the high school you attended really don't seem like all that hard to crack anymore, do they?
Oh, not at all. And I have heard from people who do have clearance that the level of detail, one of my favorites was someone who was being interviewed and was asked about the front door of the house they lived in when they were growing up. And on which side, if you were inside looking out, on which side of the door were the hinges?
That's a serious question.
And, you know, that a level of detail like that, I mean, forget, you know, what was the name of your first pet. It's like, you know, when your first pet was sleeping on your bed, was it at your feet or beside, you know, that kind of level of detail is just incredible. And now it belongs to someone else. Now, go ahead, Dave.
Oh no, I was going to say the worst part about that, I mean, it all of that is bad, right? The worst part about that is that when you reach a certain level of security clearance, they start asking questions about your sexual history and your health history, because one of the things they're most worried about is the ability for somebody to blackmail you for information, right? So even though we're getting a little bit better about attitudes about some of these things, we still have that kind of information out there that can ruin careers. It's not even just about emptying out your bank account, because that's something that can be fixed. You know, fraud can be replaced, those sorts of things, with a lot of work. But we're now talking about careers being ruined and lives being ruined. So I don't know how you put the genie back in that bottle, really. And the fact that that information is kept in an unencrypted file is an inexcusable breach of trust between the government and the people they're asking for clearance for. how in the world do you grant clearance to the federal government for giving, for getting this information if they can't keep it and encrypt it?
No, absolutely. And, you know, I want to pivot ever so slightly because, Kelly, you had a great article on Information Week today about millennials and mobile apps. Many of these apps, now, most of them don't go with the breadth of information that we're talking about in this federal breach, but a lot of them dig pretty deeply into a particular segment of your life. And, you know, well, tell our listeners what you discovered in this article that you've got up on informationweek.com right now.
Sure. This week I actually had a really great conversation with a security expert over at IBM about mobile apps and just how incredibly unsafe they are, especially in the enterprise. And that's an issue for everyone, but it's becoming more of an issue now because millennials are not taking over the workforce, but increasingly more and more joining the workforce each year to the point that by 2020, half of the workforce in the U.S. will be millennials. And while this is good in the sense that they're going to bring a positive attitude towards technology and all these fresh ideas, they're also very relaxed in terms of their approach to mobile security. So most, I think it was, I have the information on hand, it was over half of millennials are totally cool with downloading apps without reading any of the permission details or thinking about where their information is going. So a millennial will be in your workplace and be on their phone on any number of apps, and they don't know where their information is going. They don't know who they've opened their phone to, really. And if they have corporate information on that phone, then that's something that hackers have access to. So that's kind of like a problem that businesses should be keeping their eye on, especially as more millennials are hired and start to take on different roles.
Well, now, Dave, what do you think? Does this sound like something that's just an issue for those crazy kids?
I suspect it is a little worse for millennials simply because some of the millennials we're talking about are relatively inexperienced still. They haven't had that first time where they've been bitten. You know, once you get bitten, you know, twice shy, as they say. You know, I being a little older, have gone through this on the internet, having things happen to me, viruses and that sort of thing. So I'm more careful. I don't actually use my personal cell phone for anything work-related at all. I suspect that statement would be foreign to the average newcomer to the enterprise. At the same time, I think it's entirely unfair to say that millennials are the only group of people who are bad at security, particularly mobile security. I think we have a rampant mobile security problems throughout, from baby boomers who haven't kept up with technology to Gen Xers who just don't care, as Gen Xers are told. We just don't care. So I don't want to put it all on millennials, but I think experience has something to do with it, right? So probably a little bit.
Well, you know, to me, one of the fascinating pieces of this is the whole notion of what we expect and what we mean when we talk about security and privacy, because it's one of those things where I know coming up, I had a long list of things that fell into the category of nobody's business. And when I talk to, you know, my son, who's in his mid-20s, or his friends, or even people who are a little younger than him, they have a rather smaller list of things that are considered no one else's business. And much of their life is just lived with the expectation that pretty much anyone will be able to find out about it. And I wonder whether that has some implications when it comes to things like blackmail, because obviously if you expect that everyone knows about something, it's tough to blackmail you about it, but also about what we can use for some of these additional security factors. I mean, there are many things that are part of the traditional suite of questions to ask somebody to verify who they are. And if all of these private, he puts in little bunny ear air quotes, pieces of information are known to everyone, well, it becomes harder to have these secret pieces of identity. Kelly, what do you think about that? Am I oversimplifying, or do you think there's something about this that bears thinking about?
I think it's definitely something worth thinking about. You know, millennials more so than any generation are so used to sharing their information. You know, like, this is something that came up during my conversation, and it's so true that there are so many apps that require access to different parts of your phone that they don't really need. Like, there are certain games that ask you for your GPS location. Like, why does Candy Crush need to know that? You know what I mean? So, and millennials will just say, oh, okay, sure, like, you can have access to my GPS. Or, like, for a different app that needs access to your contacts, like, oh, yeah, have access to my contacts. And they have no idea who's on the other side of that, who's accessing their contacts, and who can potentially know where they are. So, and it bears thinking about that when you download a mobile app for free, as so many millennials do, that you're the product being sold there. It's your data that's being sold. It's not, you're not paying for that app, and the app has to make money somehow. So I think it's definitely something worth thinking about.
You know, it was interesting at this week's WWDC from Apple, when they were unveiling some of the new pieces of the updates to Mac OS X and iOS, one of the things they talked about, especially with iOS, is this notion that Siri will know much more about you and therefore will become a much more effective personal assistant. And I know that Microsoft and Google have each talked about that sort of thing as well. I suppose one of the questions is whether the value of that personal assistant in your pocket is worth sharing your information with people, people who you don't know personally. Now, Dave, do you use any of these electronic personal assistants?
I actually use Google Now. I think Google Now is the best combo of personal assistants, but also stays in the background. I may experiment with Cortana at some point because Cortana looks really strong. But I have to say, what I like about Google Now is that I can give it just the information I want to have, and it will give it back to me. So I enjoy Google Now telling me, you know, I'm an hour from home or whatever. But I don't have to ask it for information. I'm not interested in it keeping. But I have to say, there's a flip side to this that's really interesting. Last week, I did an article for AllAnalytics.com that basically there was a lot of raw data that came out about how people feel about privacy. And when you ask them, do you want privacy, everybody says yes. But when you actually watch their behavior, it doesn't match. So, for instance, one of the questions was, is it okay for a company to use private information of yours that you have given to them to construct a better picture of who you are to serve you better? And something like 68% of people said no, which I think is hilarious because the average consumer has 10 loyalty cards from companies. That's the average. And something like 93% of Americans have at least one loyalty card in their wallet. And that is, by definition, giving somebody your personal data and asking them to use that data to serve you in some capacity, right? That's what it is. Send me coupons in exchange for my information, right? So the fact that Americans are doing this in large numbers, but then when asked about whether companies should be doing that, they say no. It's clear to me how either uneducated they are or how ridiculous they are, because what they're saying and what they're doing don't match at all.
Well, Kelly, how about you? Are you a big user of the personal assistants? Is this something that you base some of your work life on?
No, I never really got into, I also use a very old phone that doesn't support Siri, but I never really thought much about the personal assistant space, just because, I don't know, it's not something that I feel like I would use very often. But I think it's interesting what Dave said about people and sharing their data in exchange for coupons, and how people say that they wouldn't want that, because I was reading a study a while ago that said part of the reason that people are starting to become more free with their data is because they're given something in return. You know, like you give me X amount of data, you can download this app, or like if you enter your email, we'll send you coupons. And people are open to sharing their information in that way. So I think it's really interesting that they said they wouldn't do something like that, because like you said, Dave, that's everywhere. People always have loyalty cards. I get so many emails a day from companies that I've given my email to. It's everywhere.
You know, one of the things I find fascinating is this new loyalty card that they're advertising that goes across a bunch of different companies, Macy's and AT&T and a couple of gasoline companies and a pharmacy and all of that. I look at that and think, dear heavens, what an amazingly complete picture of someone you can generate if you follow their spending patterns, if they are very, very consistent about showing their loyalty card at different things. It is very impressive the kind of information you could build up. And I say that as someone who is sort of dipping my toe into the personal assistant realm. I just about a week and a half ago got a phone that supports Siri. And I think it's interesting that Cortana is coming to iOS, and the Google Live is coming to iOS. So everyone wants to be your electronic personal assistant, and I have trouble believing that it's just because they're such darned nice organizations. Dave, I think you're onto something. They want something from us.
Right. Well, my favorite thing about it was that Tim Cook was quoted earlier in the week about basically tisking Microsoft and Google and everybody for taking private information and hurting the customer and all this stuff. And he was so righteous about it. And then about 24 hours later, he announces how Siri is going to use more of your personal data to be a better assistant. And there's no sense of the disconnect between those two statements at all. And you just have to wonder, are they hypocrites or are they knowingly trying to dupe you? Because, I mean, Tim Cook is not alone in this. He just happened to be the one who tried to be all self-righteous about it. But it just seems like every company is doing this right now, and every company is trying to claim moral high ground where there is none.
I think it's going to be fascinating to watch, because in a very real sense, we're only at the beginning of this. To be honest, I think that the voice-activated and voice-interfaced personal assistant is where things like the Apple Watch are going, because with a little Bluetooth earbud and the Apple Watch, It makes a dandy little interface to Siri. And if Siri is just talking to you, then the whole thing about screen real estate doesn't matter nearly as much. So I suspect that, as I said, we're only at the beginning of this, and that in 5 to 10 years, you know, we'll wonder why people were so caught up in the whole keyboard screen thing. How very old-fashioned to use a computer in that way. Well, speaking of old-fashioned, I can think of few pastimes that are more pristine and bucolic and, you know, of the past than sitting down with a nice, fresh box of Crayola crayons and a coloring book. But there's some new news in coloring books, and leave it to our very own Dave Wagner to find it. Dave, what's going on with the whole coloring thing?
Yeah, this week's Geekend is actually encouraging you to buy a box of 64 Crayola, or probably they're up to 128 now since I was a kid, box of Crayola crayons for every one of your IT department. And I encourage you to use coloring, using crayons or markers, in everyday parts of your business, particularly if you're planning a new network or a data center move or your org charts, anything that can be done with color, I encourage you to do that. And the reason is that there has been a trend going on since April of this year of adult coloring. The number one and number two Amazon bestsellers in April were adult coloring books. And by adult, I don't mean graphic or or, you know, pornographic, just books that are designed for adults to color. And five of the top 10 best-selling books in England were adult coloring books as well. And what we've discovered is that people are really tapping in instinctively to something that can really help you be more creative, learn faster, be more engaged, remember more, read faster. There are all sorts of benefits to either the use of color or the use of coloring in your daily creative life and in the enterprise.
That is fascinating. Now, I will say I have long used a lot of colors in my note-taking. That's just part of the way that I do, especially when I'm taking notes on paper. And there's something, there's a system called Zentangle that I have seen and I've used. And I find it, you know, I'll be honest, I find it pretty relaxing to sit down and sort of scribble around with that kind of thing. So I'm not terribly surprised. I'm just kind of fascinated that it's growing. Now, Kelly, I'm going to turn to you. Do you find this surprising, or are you the kind of person who, you know, secretly, you know, keeps a drawing pad and some markers in your bag?
Coloring isn't something that I, you know, do often, but this is like the greatest news I've heard all week. I'm going to go out and buy some crayons. But I have heard that like doodling when you're on the phone or something like that can help you better retain information. So maybe that's related to some extent, but I don't know. I think this is some really great stuff that you've dug up here, Dave. I look forward to doing some experimentation.
Right. Well, it is related to doodling. Essentially, it's doodling on steroids. So if you were to doodle with a pencil, you would make use of one part of your brain that is effective. Doodling does enhance memory and learning. If you were to doodle at, say, a college lecture or in a meeting, you would recall more. If you doodle in color, you're engaging even more of your brain, and you will remember more than even if you were doing it in black and white. More importantly, if you use that color in something you're doing, and other people see it, you're engaging their brain. And I think this is pretty instinctual, right? We have color logos for companies. We don't have black and white or grayscale logos, right? We have color marketing, color advertising. We know from a business point of view the value of color. It engages. It turns people on. It's not childish to use color. As Kurt said, using it in notes is a great place to use it, right? There are many color note-taking programs out there. So why are we sort of treating ourselves like we have to be grown-ups and stop using it? We have to use a black pen or a blue pen. We should be embracing color and coloring in a workplace environment and stop feeling like it's a childish endeavor. It's actually a very much an adult endeavor. It's our brain instinctively using its existing tools to do something better than it could without. So if you are struggling, say you need a problem solved at work and you can't come up with an answer, I encourage you to pull out a box of Crayola crayons and color a picture. Doesn't even have to be related to what you're doing. It'd be even better if it was related. In fact, in 1982, there was a professor who put out a series of college textbooks that asked you to color to learn about anthropology. And since then, college textbooks have often taught anatomy using coloring, biology, chemistry. This is a long-held truth that we have known, and in the enterprise we've just chosen to ignore, and it's kind of sad.
I want to know where those textbooks were when I was in college.
Well, you know what? They definitely exist, and they definitely existed, because when I went to college, they were definitely for sale in my college school in the bookstore. So they definitely existed, and they were definitely used. I went to Johns Hopkins, which is one of the largest medical schools in the world. I can tell you for a fact, their college bookstore has these books as part of teaching anatomy. So you just happen to have professors that weren't necessarily using them, but they're very, very well used and loved in the profession. So we really need to start thinking about this as a real thing for the enterprise.
I think it's a great idea.
And just from a psychological standpoint, is there anything more filled with promise and optimism than an untouched box of 64 Crayola crayons? That cracking the box open the first time, looking upon those pristine rows, and knowing that you're going to turn that into something fabulous is the way I think each of us should start a new quarter at work. I think when companies hand out their quarterly results, everyone should get a new box of crayons. That I think that would add more to productivity than can easily be stated.
I think the Crayola people would definitely agree with you. but I absolutely agree with you, too. I love to color with my children. And you know, there's real benefit to this just on a pure stress relief point of view. Just relieving stress makes you more productive, more innovative. It means you show up to work more, by the way. If you are stressed, you have what's often known as well absenteeism that's part of you. You call in sick more often. You're less willing to gut it out and show up at work. And so you're more productive just simply by having this kind of stress relief. So even if you can't pull it off in the enterprise, even if you can't, as a CIO, convince your CEO not to fire you for letting your people color, doing it at home is an extremely good way to make you more productive and more innovative.
Well, I think I know how I'm going to spend part of my weekend now. I'm going to be enhancing my productivity by doing some coloring.
Good. Just ignore the gray and the black and the white crayon.
We use the white crayon anyway.
Yeah, the white crayon only works on black paper, right? I think the only time anybody uses the white paper is the white crayon is at Halloween when they get the black paper and they make the ghost. It's really the only time you use it.
The specialty tools are important. I think that's good. Well, speaking of specialties, it's time for each of us to talk about our specialty and especially what that's going to mean for the coming week. Kelly, let me turn to you first. What's on tap for the week ahead in the part of the world that you cover?
Well, I usually keep a very close eye on Microsoft, but this week I've been also watching Apple because of the Worldwide Developers Conference, and they had all of these announcements coming out. So I'd like to do a little digging into, because Microsoft has obviously had a year of news as well, so I'd like to kind of draw some parallels between the two and see where each company stands in relation to one another. I think that'll be really interesting. And in the meantime, I will be keeping my eyes on future updates from both of them.
Very good. And speaking of updates, where can people find your updates? What's your handle on the Tweety Pipes?
I love Twitter, and my handle is Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Sheridan, S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N, 22. And first and last name are the same on LinkedIn.
Very good. Well, we will look forward to seeing those updates and seeing all the great articles you have in store for us in the coming week. Thanks for being part of Information Week Live. We really appreciate you being here.
Oh, it was fun. Thanks, Kurt.
And Dave, let me turn to you. I know that you told me that before we went on the air, you had filed your third article of the day, therefore making the rest of us look like utter slugs. So is there any creativity left for the coming week?
Well, some of those articles won't come out for another day or two, so I'll count those. Speaking of the Tweety Pipes, one of those articles today is my take on what happened at Twitter that required the CEO of the Tweety Pipes to resign, Dick Cotolo. I feel like I have a pretty good take. In honor of the Game of Thrones finale, this Sunday I'll have a top 10 lessons CIOs can learn from the Game of Thrones, including one of those lessons being that winter is always coming. Got a big story on the top 15 rated or loved CEOs in the tech industry that I think will be very interesting for people. There are some very notable missing big names on that list, though I won't throw out any spoilers. So it should be a good week, and you know we'll keep up with the news and career stuff as we always do. Oh, and just today, by the way, came out my list of the top summer beach reads, which I think is a pretty good read, too, for people who are interested.
Very good. And let me ask you the same question I asked Kelly. I know that you have legions of fans who would love to keep up with you on Twitter. How do they do that?
At Geekend Dave, G instead of W for weekend, Geekend Dave.
Outstanding. Dave, thanks so much for being with us here on Information Week Live today.
Thanks, Kurt.
And I will modestly say that I've had a couple of articles this week on things like mobile development and Raspberry Pi. And got more coming. I've got a piece coming up on another hands-on look at a great little headset for mobile professionals, a headset from Sennheiser, and a skinny little step toward the Apple Watch. I've been running around with a little device that's somewhere between a Fitbit and a smartwatch, and talk to you about what it's meant for my productivity. That'll be coming up in the coming week, as well as some interesting news on SAP and their HANA platform, and much more. Lots of interesting things happening around the world of technology. I'd also love it if you would let me know what you think about the current state of COBOL. If you use COBOL or know people who do, drop me a line. Send me email at curtis.franklin@ubm.com. And you can keep up with everything that I'm doing on Twitter at KG4GWA. Well, it's been another great episode of Information Week Live. We're very glad that you could join us. If you're listening to this in an on-demand copy, we appreciate you being with us, but we'd love it if you would join us for the live show. That happens every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, and there's a great conversation happening online in the text chat as we are talking here on the radio. We'd love for you to be part of that. Your voice would make that conversation even better. Also, keep track of everything going on at informationweek.com. Plenty of great articles, and we're coming up on the return of Interop Radio. That'll be happening very soon, as well as, well, we've got some new things bubbling to the surface in the world of Information Week Radio. So stay tuned for lots of great news yet to come. Well, for Kelly Sheridan, Dave Wagner, and all of us here at Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you on the web.